Welcome to the Bulls Show, your look at the Chicago Bulls from a fan's perspective. I'm your host, Nils, and joining me on this episode is esteemed Chicago Tribune beat writer for the Bulls, KC Johnson. KC, thanks for coming back onto the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Would you say that you're busier now covering the Bulls these last couple weeks during the off season than during the season when the Bulls, you know, actually played basketball?
Yeah, it's obviously been a pretty big time with the dismissal of Tom Thibodeau and now the hiring of Fred Hoiberg. It's really, that's the way the NBA these days, actually, though. I mean, if you look at last July when we were covering the Carmelo Anthony sweepstakes and then that moved right into the Pau Gasol signing, that's typically a lot of the big stories in the NBA happen in the offseason now. It's just kind of the rhythm of the beat. And obviously pretty much everybody knew that a coaching change was, if not a certainty, certainly a strong likelihood as the season wound down, so we were all kind of prepared for it from a media standpoint.
Yeah, you know, it couldn't be more perfect timing with this recording because we're recording on a Monday night and hot off the press. It sounds like you got another busy day tomorrow attending a press conference for a major announcement, or shall we say mayor announcement.
Yeah, there you go. the release just came an hour ago. I mean, obviously we've been writing, it's a done deal for 4 or 5 days, but now the Bulls have made it official. Well, not even technically official because they just say they're making a major announcement tomorrow, but Hoiberg is here in Chicago as of this evening and will be introduced at the Advocate Center tomorrow afternoon. And, you know, I think anybody who's listening to this is probably a big Bulls fan, might know of Fred's stint here as a player. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone will be surprised when they hear a very poised, articulate guy get up and speak tomorrow. He's a very, very, very good media speaker, and I look forward to covering him as a coach, having covered him as a player as well.
Perhaps the worst kept secret in terms of his hiring, but also maybe the most efficient coaching search since it was supposed to be a nationwide search just a couple days ago, right?
Yeah, and management's getting, you know, killed for that. And, you know, that's just typically how the Bulls are. They try to be evasive and maybe try to hide the truth sometimes. You know, probably not just the Bulls, other franchises do it as well. I personally don't think there would have been any harm in saying something like, you know, we have a preferred candidate in mind and not revealing who it was. Or mm-hmm. You could even lie and say we have some preferred candidates in mind. But, yeah, everybody pretty much knew that Hoiberg was the guy, and like I said, we've been writing for 4 or 5 days, and now it's just going to become official tomorrow.
Yeah, that whole stretch wasn't the finest PR hour from the team. We'll, of course, get into the drama surrounding Tibbs, and I'll pick your brain a little bit about Fred Hoiberg in a little bit more detail as the next Bulls coach. But before we even go there, I want to go back to when all of this started to materialize, and that would be when the Bulls ended their season with a disappointing performance against the Cavs, Game 6, Eastern Conference Semifinals. We're only 3 weeks removed from that disaster, even though it feels a little bit longer. Many have accused the Bulls of quitting during that game. What's your take on what happened?
Well, I mean, it certainly was a shocking loss, but I would say, obviously it was at a high-profile time, but I would say there were several of those performances during the season for anybody who was paying attention, including one in Cleveland during the regular season in April there. In February there. So, you know, that was just kind of consistent with this Bulls team this year. It left kind of the trademarks that you were used to seeing from other Bulls teams under Tom Thibodeau, these, you know, try hard, you know, multi-effort, defensive, strong rebounding teams. Those traits were apparent in glimpses, but they weren't as consistent as in seasons past. So, you know, it was certainly a really poor effort in the season-ending loss in Game 6. But, you know, like I said, that those kind of performances littered the season throughout if you were paying attention.
Yeah, it was definitely a microcosm of the 2014-15 campaign. And like you were saying, you know, it was just as confusing as it was frustrating to fans who saw a team under Tibbs with an identity of effort and resiliency. And instead, during that game, they looked like a team that knew the end was near and preferred to let their season wither away. There was also some speculation from other media outlets that a possible rift existed between the Bulls' starting backcourt of Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, basically claiming their egos won't allow them to coexist. You've been around the team. Is there any merit to that alleged beef?
Well, I would say this, and I don't comment on other people's work. It's a tough job. Everyone does what they can do to the best of their ability, talks to different people, and everybody prints the truth as they know it. What I would say is this. Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose played together very well on many, many occasions. So I certainly think that they have the capability to play well together. I do also think there is going to be an adjustment with Jimmy becoming a primary scorer. That's just the natural evolution of things. I think you saw this season that at times Derrick Rose was comfortable in a facilitating mode. He's got a track record of being comfortable in that mode. If you remember, I know it's high school basketball, so it's not a great analogy, but in a state championship game for Simeon, he once scored 2 points and set up all his teammates because he kept getting double and triple teamed. So I think it's something you can certainly keep your eye on because Jimmy has changed as far as an offensive player. But I don't think that that's why Derrick Rose was passive in the second half of Game 6.
What would be the alternative reasoning, in your opinion?
You know, I think that Derrick just in general had a weird game that game.
Was he afraid of Matthew Dellavedova going after his knees?
No, I also don't think it was that. I mean, he wasn't out there. He played a. I actually don't remember. I'm you're catching me at the end of a fifth straight 16-hour day working this coaching story. So I don't have the details in front of me. But I remember he played a short stint in one of those quarters, either quarter three or quarter four, and he just wasn't really in rhythm. It did look like there were times when he did pass the ball to Jimmy and just kind of ran to the corner and looked, passive-aggressive in that moment. I do think it was a matter of Jimmy trying to do a lot on his end offensively. He was putting his head down and trying to score at times. I think a lot of people left the page that second half of Game 6, but I don't think that's, why Derrick was not shooting a lot. I don't have the answer to why he wasn't. I remember asking him about a post game, but I don't even remember what he said. How's that?
Well, you brought up a good point, though, that, this is an adjustment, and it's been such a small sample size with Butler in this primary scorer role. So it's going to take some time. Rose has played with Keith Bogans for the majority of his tenure with the Bulls or in his MVP form, given that he was out those 2 years. So, he's probably not used to sharing the backcourt with another primary ball handler. So we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, now, but just go back to the Bucks series. There were several games in the Bucks series where they both played great together. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's evidence on both sides. Right. I certainly think I'm not dismissing the dynamic in some. I think it's certainly something to keep your eye on because Jimmy has changed. I mean, he's, mm-hmm. no one expected Jimmy to be this type of offensive player. Except maybe Jimmy. So it's certainly something to watch. But look, to me, ultimately, this is probably a good problem to have. You've got two All-Star, sure. One current All-Star player and one former All-Star player who I think, if he stays healthy next year, has a chance to return to All-Star level in the backcourt. This is what Bulls fans have been, clamoring for and dreaming for mm-hmm. a long time, this second star. And now they've got it in the backcourt in Jimmy Butler. And so it's something they got to figure out. But there's certainly a body of evidence for both, I would say more for the positive side than the negative side.
Well, while any divide between Rose and Butler is only conjecture at this point, something we know as fact is the tension and discord between the front office and Tom Thibodeau. It's been well documented, analyzed. But what I'm really interested in at this point was Tibbs' relationship with the players and how that relationship deteriorated as well, or if at all. Would you say that Tibbs lost the locker room despite, all the success in the past 5 years? Were players worn down by him and ready for a change? There were reports, I think one of your articles actually mentioned, that there were reports that players didn't endorse Tibbs as much as you'd expect during their exit interviews, which contradicted all of the support he received from players publicly. How did Tibbs' relationship with certain players change?
Well, there's a lot there, so I'll try to pick off what I can. What I will say is this. Losing the locker room, to me, is a catchphrase that gets overused in sports. Tom Thibodeau did not lose the locker room, because here's why. Even if some players didn't like him, mm-hmm. they respected him. And respect is more important than like. You can't be around Tom Thibodeau and not respect his work ethic and his knowledge of the league. I mean, that's what he's done for the last two decades plus, is devoted his life to trying to figure out NBA basketball and make players better, whether he's an associate head coach, an assistant coach, a head coach. That's what he does. So players respected him. Did players get tired of his ways sometimes? Absolutely. And the one thing I would say is, you know, the minutes restriction got so much attention this year, and people just try to neatly paint it as this chapter in this feud between Tom Thibodeau and management. What I would always say, and what I try to point out in some articles, is did you ever hear the players that the minutes restriction was being placed upon complain? Joakim Noah, the one time he talked about it after he sat down the stretch in that Sunday matinee in Oklahoma City, he came out and supported it. He said he understood why it was in place and why he was playing the minutes he was playing. Joakim Noah is as competitive an athlete as ever recovered. So if Joakim Noah doesn't have a problem with it, that tells you that the players didn't have a problem with it. He and Derek mm-hmm. didn't have a problem with it. They appreciated management and the medical staff trying to protect them since they were coming off surgery. So there was more player pushback this season for the first time in Tom's five seasons on the sideline for the Bulls. I wrote about that several times. It was pretty well documented. I know that's why Tom went on that classic January post-game rant, you know, who's in the circle, who's out of the circle. I mean, he was tired of people pushing back and doing things like skipping drills in practice or not maybe buying in as completely as they had in the past. So, you know, look, anything you say looks like you're throwing dirt on Tom Thibodeau's grave. Tom Thibodeau mm-hmm. did a wonderful job in his five seasons here. Did some players get tired of him this season? Absolutely. Did they respect him still? Absolutely as well.
Was there a specific point in the season or even in that Cavs series where you thought Tibbs' coaching wasn't having the same positive effect as past seasons?
Well, I think that's another thing that needs to be pointed out. I try to make this clear in some of my articles. I asked Gar and John this at the press conference after Tom's dismissal. You know, again, I think people wanted to just neatly paint this dismissal as a feud between Tom and management. I can just tell you that from management's perspective, this had moved into questions about his performance. They felt like they handed him an elite or the potential to be an elite offensive team, and there were times where they felt they lagged in that department. And I know the stats say what the stats say in terms of offensive efficiency, pace, all those things were probably better, but you know, especially in the postseason, that was not an offense that was running very efficiently. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm not putting all that on Tom. They dealt with a lot of injuries. We saw well documented the starters rolling together for 21 games during the regular season. It just the entire season, and I wrote this many times, had a disjointed feel to it, mm-hmm. despite 50 victories. So I can just say that management felt like Tom could have got more out of the roster this year. And that played a part in his dismissal as well.
You've been covering the Bulls for nearly 20 years. You've seen the Bulls let other coaches go, everyone from Phil Jackson to Tim Floyd, Bill Cartwright, Skiles, Del Negro. Has this been the ugliest divorce you've covered? Has there been one filled with more controversy and scrutiny?
Boy, they all kind of run together. the Floyd and Skiles ones are so memorable because they both happened on Christmas Eve.
I was about to say, if there's any silver lining, Tibbs didn't get fired over the holidays.
There you go. This one was messy. I mean, it wasn't horribly messy. I mean, there's controversy in pro sports a lot. I mean, but it got a lot of national attention just because also Tom is very well respected and well liked around the league and obviously has a very vocal ally and advocate in Jeff Van Gundy, who has a bully pulpit and does a great job broadcasting, you know, for ESPN and ABC. So it played out probably on a bigger national stage. And plus, we're just living in a different media age now than like, you know, Tim Floyd's dismissal. But, you know, Tim's Christmas Eve exit news conference was really, really nasty. It just Twitter didn't exist then. times have changed.
For sure. So moving on from Tibbs, let's take a look at his all but official successor, former Bull, former Iowa State coach Fred Hoiberg. We know there's a stark contrast between Tibbs and Hoiberg, from coaching styles to demeanor to, most importantly, compliance and relationship building. We know Hoiberg is one of Gar's former guys. But other than being buddy-buddy with management, what can Bulls fans expect from Hoiberg? How much do you think the culture and identity of the Bulls change under his watch?
Okay, what I would first say is I actually put that word compliance out one day, and
I remember that.
I actually immediately changed it. Look, you put a lot of words out there. Sometimes you get them right. Most of the times you get them right. Every once in a while you have a clunker. That was a clunker. I think the better word
is collaborative.
Yeah, than compliant. So I can just tell you that Fred has a very, very even-keeled temperament, very poised, doesn't get rattled under pressure, very comfortable in his own skin, very self-deprecating. You know, no two people are exactly alike, but look, the Bulls know Steve Kerr very, very well. They watched him replace a very successful, very respected coach coming off a 50-win season in Mark Jackson. And, you know, with his leadership skills that involve some levity and self-deprecation, you know, just inject that franchise with a different mood. And, again, I want to be real careful with anything I say, because it looks like when you're praising Fred, it sounds like you're dissing Tom. Mm-hmm. And, look, they're just two different people. So I'm not saying anything about Tom Thibodeau here. And I actually have no idea how Fred's going to pan out as an NBA head coach. I can just tell you, having covered Fred for four seasons as a player, you're going to find someone that is very, very comfortable with his leadership style, with his own abilities, and also he's comfortable admitting when he doesn't know the answer to something. And I expect he'll surround himself with a fantastic staff, just like Steve Kerr did out in Golden State. And I think he'll have a very, very nice touch with players, just because I saw that, you know, from a playing standpoint in the locker room when I covered him back in the Floyd Cartwright era. So I do think he'll change the mood in terms of just the building vibe overall, because certainly there'll be less drama. It'll be a more collaborative effort with the front office. And I think in that sense alone, that will trickle down to the players, and that can only be a positive thing.
You don't think he's going to sleep in his office?
He's got four children, so I'm going to guess no.
So on a scale of Tim Floyd to Steve Kerr, where do you see Hoiberg falling as a first-year NBA coach?
Well, I actually wrote something about this for tomorrow in tomorrow's Tribune. I mean, you know, I know Floyd's an easy target, and look, I took plenty of shots at him covering him myself, but as we all know, the NBA is a players' league, and Red Auerbach couldn't have won with the roster Tim Floyd had. So it's a different time, and Fred Hoiberg is inheriting a roster with two current All-Stars and two former All-Stars. Tim Floyd, you know, inherited Corey Benjamin and Cornell David. So it's going to be different in that regard alone.
Those were dark times.
Yes, they were. I expect Fred to be very good record-wise, but he's also got, you know, a big example to follow. Tom Thibodeau won a lot of regular season games, and you know, he won three playoff series with Derrick Rose healthy. He won 3-2 in playoff series with Derrick Rose healthy. And you can't really judge the other ones, because when your best player's not on your team, it's hard to achieve postseason success.
I don't know how much scouting you've done in Ames, Iowa, but is there a specific type of player that you think will thrive or even struggle, on the other hand, under Hoiberg's system?
That's a great question. I don't watch a lot of college basketball just because I'm so busy with NBA. I can just tell you, talking to people, I talked to Jay Williams today, who obviously analyzes college basketball for ESPN. And, you know, he said that, you know, Fred, the type of player that thrives under Fred Hoiberg is one who is versatile offensively, makes quick decisions, isn't really defined by position. You know, he talked more about him at an offensive level, just because that's what Fred is known for. But talk about just how people go to Iowa State, because Fred runs NBA stuff, and it's a conducive system to acclimate you for the next level. So talks about the quick actions that he gets into, you know, is getting set and getting into actions within the first 3 to 5 seconds of the shot clock. So, you know, that's what you need for NBA basketball. I do think Fred will try to spread the floor. The three-point shot was a big part of his arsenal at Iowa State, and obviously management is still high on Doug McDermott, even though he didn't play much his rookie year. So I think you'll see Mirotić and McDermott out there quite a bit. Defensively, I don't know much about him. So, you know, obviously he's going to have to prove he can coach at that level, and he's certainly following some big footsteps on that end of the ball. But offensively, I know that the Bulls management feels like they have a really nice fit here.
That's exciting because it sounds like we're going to get an infusion of space and pacing with the Bulls next season with Hoiberg running the ship. I might be getting ahead of myself here, but have you had a chance to speak to any Bulls players about Hoiberg and get their initial thoughts on their new coach?
No, I have not. I assume maybe one or two, if they're around, might show up for the press conference tomorrow, and if not, that'll be a story for the next coming days, you know, trying to get some reaction from players about what they know about him. I know, obviously, Doug McDermott.
He's got to be salivating, well. Right?
Well, yeah, it's weird. I mean, just, you know, the Ames-Iowa connections with the Bulls are crazy, from, you know, Floyd to Hoiberg to McDermott, and Hoiberg replacing McDermott's dad at Iowa State. So, but I know Doug knows him really well, you know, I know Heinrich has some background with him, so we'll see. But, you know, players in general respected Tom, and I'm sure they'll respect Fred as well.
Looking at this Bulls roster as it currently stands and the constraints imposed by the salary cap, there doesn't seem to be much opportunity to revamp the roster barring a significant trade. But what personnel moves, if any, do you expect the Bulls front office to make this summer? Are you hearing anything about certain players they might be targeting, whether it's in the draft or free agency?
No, I've been so busy with this coach story, I haven't really got much into personnel stuff. That's, you know, when that'll be as we get closer to the draft. I would assume, this is my own personal opinion, this is not reporting, but I would assume in the draft you got to be looking at shoring up either point guard or maybe some front court depth, big man depth. I would personally opt for point guard. I mean, you know, that's what they tried to do with Marcus Teague a couple of years ago, was get that long-term backup for Derek, and also someone that maybe will allow him to play off the ball more. The big reason why they signed Heinrich twice, and Heinrich obviously is in his last legs. So I think if you can find, and look, this is a pretty deep draft for point guard, especially with point guards with positional size. So I think you get somebody that can, you know, back up Derek and or play point and move Derek off the ball. So I think that's a good option for you. So that's certainly something, again, my opinion, I think that they should try to address, especially when you're driving, picking 22nd, you're not really driving the draft. You're seeing what comes to you, and point guard is a deep position in this draft.
Fair to say, even with the coaching change, that this Bulls team is still a contender and next year won't be viewed as a rebuilding year?
Well, they certainly should enter next season with championship aspirations, just like they did this season. The problem is, as we all know, you know, they're dealing with the Michael Jordan of their generation in their same conference, albeit in their same division. You know, it's weird because when I was doing I think sports predictions are one of the stupidest things we do in our business, but obviously we have to do them anyway. And when I was doing my preview for the Cavs-Bulls series, we do an edge matchup, and the Bulls basically got the check marks on almost every head-to-head matchup, yep. But I still picked the Cavaliers just because, to me, it's hard to bet against that guy. I mean, I covered the second three-peat. I saw Jordan, you know, his era teams dispatch a lot of great teams, and that's what's going on with LeBron right now. So you know, the Bulls will be really good next year, but any team that's got LeBron often is better. So it's going to be another tough task for them to knock off LeBron next season.
Speaking of which, I got to fit this in real quick. Warriors, Cavs, final starting Thursday. Real quick, who you got and how many games?
Well, so I just said it's going to be real hard to bet against LeBron, and here I'm tempted to bet against LeBron. The Warriors, what I like about the Warriors is they're really, really good, obviously, at both ends. They're such a good defensive team. And with home court advantage and that defense, I do think the Warriors will win. I think it'll go 7 just because I think LeBron is having such a transcendent playoffs. He's going to almost single-handedly keep the Cavs alive. I think it's going to be a great, great series. And I, you know, this sounds like waffling. It probably is. I wouldn't be surprised if it went either way. But since you're pinning me to the wall here, I will say Warriors in 7.
All right. Well, going back to the Bulls and their offseason plans, with all the criticism received from Tibbs' dismissal, which really was a public display of dysfunction within the Bulls organization, you know, should the front office be concerned right now about anyone else, coach or player, wanting to work for them? You know, in other words, how much did the Bulls' handling of Tibbs tarnish their already suspect reputation, and what's the perception of the Bulls league-wide?
Well, I mean, you just kind of nailed it. It was not that press conference and that press release was not well received. I personally understand where it came from, just because I had been told many times how angry Jerry was at Tom this year. I mean, Jerry was a big oasis for Tom during the early stages of this kind of feud with management. You know, it was, even though Jerry isn't around the team as much, when Tom needed Jerry sometimes to just kind of vent to, that he was kind of this ally for him. And that was a big change this year, is Jerry turned on him because he was so upset with the Van Gundy comments, mm-hmm. and also some other stuff. So that, you know, whether or not you like the statement, I wasn't surprised by that one bit. Jerry was very, very upset, and it was a very public rebuking of Tom, obviously. So as far as your question, I mean, look, the Bulls still got who they wanted to be coach. So, I mean, you know, and here's the other thing. If they target a player and want to get a guy and they offer the best money, the players will come here. That's just how the NBA works. You know, they didn't get Carmelo last year. They immediately got their number two guy. I mean, there's still quite a bit that's attractive here. The history, the city.
It's still a big market.
The big market, the tradition. It's still a very well-run, it may not seem like this on the outside, but I'm telling you from the inside, this practice facility is sparkling, state-of-the-art. They travel first class. It's a very high-class organization from the inside, things people may not see. I get why some people, you know, mock the PR aspect from the outside, but players don't care about that stuff. I mean, if they've got a great, you know, private jet and a four-star hotel and a sparkling practice facility and great city and money and chance to win, that's all that they care about.
True. I was about to say, you know, the Bulls seem to always swing and miss on the big name free agent anyway, so I guess not too much can change.
Yep, that's true. They're just on LeBron and Carmelo.
last question on the personnel front. You know, we know that there's a logjam among the Bulls' current bigs with Joe, Taj, Powell, and Nico all needing playing time. Do you see the Bulls trading one of these pieces in the offseason? Is one more expendable than the other?
It would just be totally my guess. I have not done any reporting on that one yet. What I would say is I personally would be surprised, mm-hmm. because you can't expect Pau Gasol to play 78 games again next season. You
right.
just can't. He was so healthy this year. And also, you know, Joe obviously had his pretty well-documented health issues last season. You don't know, that's a mixed bag going forward. I do think he will be healthier next season, but look, he had cartilage removed. So that's, you know, that's anytime cartilage is removed, it's not coming back. So
right.
that part of that knee situation is going to be there. It's just how much better he can manage it with a whole summer of basketball and training activities. You know, last summer was strictly a rehab situation for him. So between those two question marks, I think front court depth is something that you need. And I know Taj's name always gets brought up because he's such a productive two-way player with a very manageable contract, but that's also the exact kind of contract the Bulls have always valued. You know, they love getting guys on value deals. They've got Taj on one. So I think trading that would kind of go against historically how they've operated philosophically.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all just my opinion, but I think you leave it as is. I think you might be able to use that front court better. I mean, it may be a hard task, but you know, maybe split up Gasol and Noah at the five and bring one of them off the bench. I think that's something you might want to look at. It's certainly something Fred will have to consider.
Casey, my last question. How can we get the Blackhawks championship play and organizational cohesion spread to the Bulls? Do we need Hoiberg to hire Coach Q as an assistant?
You're asking the wrong guy, because when I covered my two seasons of the Blackhawks, I had three general managers and four coaches in two seasons. So my association with the Blackhawks is one of complete dysfunction. So you're asking the wrong guy there.
I mean, the team share the United Center. You'd think winning would be contagious.
When I cover things at the United Center, messiness is contagious. So.
Well, I'm just happy that the United Center is hosting at least one finals this June. Would have preferred it be the NBA Finals, but I guess Chicago can't have all the nice things.
Exactly.
Well, Casey, thanks for coming on. Best of luck this offseason covering the beginning of the Fred Hoiberg era that begins tomorrow. I think the press conference is, what, 2 p.m.?
2 p.m. Tuesday afternoon.
Hey, well, I always enjoy your work and hopefully get some time off before we catch you again next season.
All right. Appreciate you having me on. I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Absolutely. Make sure to give Casey a follow on Twitter at @CaseyJHoop and check out all his Bulls coverage in the Chicago Tribune. You've been listening to The Bulls Show. Give us a follow at The Bulls Show. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Check us out on bloggable.com and go with hiphop.com. For Casey, I'm Mills. Go Warriors. See you next time.